This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Canada's Privacy Commissioner says Canadians have the right to get certain information about them delisted from online search engine results. The Office of Privacy Commissioner found that public listings about individuals that could pose harm to a person's safety or dignity can be taken down in the event that an individual's risk outweighs the public interest. The decision comes after a complaint was made against Google in 2017. In that case, a man who once faced a criminal charge that was dropped argued that the news coverage of the original charge remained readily available in search results associated with his name. He said this caused him direct harm and lost employment opportunities.
The right to be forgotten, perhaps better characterized as a right to de-index from search results, has been a hotly debated privacy issue for well over a decade now, pitting those that argue that the harms that may come from the amplification of outdated but accurate content outweighs the benefits of maintaining such content in search indexes. The issue got its start in Europe, but the Canadian experience has featured privacy commissioner findings and investigations alongside court rulings and provincial reforms. As you just heard, a recent privacy commissioner finding moves Canada one step closer to a right to be forgotten. Chris Klein is one of Canada's leading legal experts on privacy, access to information, and information security issues. He's the founder and managing partner of Innovation LLP, a leading firm specializing in data protection. He's the managing director of IAPP Canada, and he teaches a privacy law course at my faculty at the University of Ottawa. Chris joins me on the podcast to discuss the background behind the right to be forgotten, the recent OPC finding, and what may lie ahead on the issue. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Michael. It's awesome to be here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm really glad you've come on. I think it's long overdue for one of Canada's true leaders when it comes to privacy. And you're coming on an issue that I think starts to attract quite a lot of attention. You know, as you know, and I'm sure listeners know, Google finds itself in a pretty wide range of legal entanglements, really, say the least. There's AI-related issues, competition, certainly, some of its digital advertising, and notably privacy. And from a Canadian perspective, one of the longest simmering privacy issues that they're involved with recently took a notable step forward with a privacy commissioner finding involving the removal of search results from Google search index, something that's often referred to as the right to be forgotten. You know, I want to get into the Canadian case, but before we do that, I think it's important to understand some of the background and context. Why don't we start with this so-called right to be forgotten, which played out years ago in Europe? Can you talk a little bit about how that took place in Europe and the formation of this right that we've seen the subject of much debate now over the years?
Yeah, it's funny. It's been around for, I think, 10 or 11 years now, this issue of the right to be forgotten. And it did start with a court case in Europe, the Gonzalez case out of Spain, where an individual Googled his name and turned up sort of old articles about himself that were unflattering. It particularly shed him in a bad financial light. And so he asked Google to sort of de-index them. And he made a claim that under the privacy law in Spain, which was based on the 1995 EU Privacy Directive, that he had a right that Google had to take down these articles, the links to the articles, not the articles themselves, just the links to the articles. And the court ultimately agreed with the complainant, and they said that Google or any search engine, if they're linking to an article that is inadequate, irrelevant, or I think this is sort of maybe duplicitous, but it's either irrelevant or no longer relevant, then the search engine has to remove that link from that search index. The only caveat being that if there was a greater public interest that outweighed the privacy claim, then the link could remain. So they created sort of a balancing act. And at the time, a lot of people, including yourself, I remember hearing you speak about it. It was a little bit unnerving to think that it was the Googles of the world that were going to be the first people to decide whether or not a person's complaint was worthy. So it is kind of like putting the person who ultimately had to make the decision was the same person who was being regulated. And so it became a sort of a difficult system to work through. But like I said, we've had 11 years of it now. And in Europe, at least, I think people have calmed down about sort of how it works. And if you complain to Google and if Google disagrees with you, well, then there are mechanisms to escalate it upwards to either a commissioner, a regulator, or even to a court.
Okay. So it's, if not commonplace, it's become accepted or at least implemented for now so many years in Europe. You have a sense of how that right has been enforced? Have we seen cases afterwards in Europe? We have a sense of the kind of numbers that this happens to involve?
Google does report on the number of requests they get, and there are, shockingly, quite a few of them. And Google also discloses, the number in which they feel that the complaint or the request to take down is merited, and also the ones where they say it's not merited. And a few of them have gone on to regulators who have opined either in Google's favor or in the complainant's favor. So what seemed at first to maybe sort of be a very daunting task, I think, at least with respect to Google, because they have so many resources that they can put towards doing this, that it's worked out. It is interesting too, because like I mentioned, this case first arose in 2014. And since then, of course, many of the listeners will know that GDPR was passed in 2018 or came into effect in 2018. And whereas the right to be forgotten was sort of an interpretation of the Spanish law in 2014, in 2018, GDPR actually sort of codified that law and incorporated the test that was developed by the court in Europe. And so there's actually been a codification of the right to be forgotten or the request for delisting in Europe.
So well established now, both legally in terms of having been incorporated within the GDPR, as well as from an operational perspective, it requires a lot of resources. But as you suggest, we know Google has a lot of resources. So to the extent to which they're the target, and of course they are by far the largest search engine, it seems to function. That of course begs the question about the situation here in Canada, where we haven't seen privacy reform yet, but in some ways. We've seen some efforts to try to either bring it into provincial laws or make an effort to try to interpret Canadian law as is incorporating some of this. Can you talk about what we have right now, either ex that's explicit in Canadian law that might address the issue? And it's probably helpful to look at it both from a federal perspective as well as a provincial one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you're hinting to the provincial one, because Quebec, again, sort of being the province in there, the jurisdiction in Canada that sort of leads the way in terms of modernizing. They were the first in the mid-1990s to come up with a private sector privacy law. And then just a few years ago, they took that sort of older privacy law in the private sector, and they modernized it. And when they did so, they expressly codified the quote unquote right to be forgotten, or the right to have your information de-indexed by a search engine. And they borrowed quite heavily on the test that was codified in GDPR. It's not exactly the same language, but it's this idea that if you have information that gets indexed and it's linked to it, and it's old, irrelevant, or it can cause harm, and there is no public interest in keeping those links, then under the Quebec law, the search engine has to take it down. I asked, knowing that I was coming onto your show, whether or not it's happened yet in Quebec. And all the sources that I have, no one's been able to tell me if anyone has actually, asked Google or any of the search engines to abide by that section. So we're still waiting to sort of see if it's actually used and how it will play out in Quebec.
Okay, that's it's interesting to hear that it's there, but we don't know yet whether or not it's been used. The federal approach to this issue is a bit of a long and winding road. It goes back quite a few years. And as I mentioned off the top, we had recent developments and it's not over yet. Why don't we walk through that and gain an understanding of where the arguments are? And certainly you mentioned the European case in 2014. In 2018, the federal commissioner takes a first step in this direction with a draft policy position.
It was a draft policy position dealing with online reputation. So a little bit broader than just the right to be forgotten. And the federal regulator, the OPC, hinted in that policy position that if and when they were to take a look at this, quote unquote, right to be forgotten, that it would be likely that they would interpret the law, PIPEDA, to contain that right. And at the time, I remember reading that policy position, and I thought, there are two ways in which you can interpret PIPEDA as containing a right to be forgotten. One is because PIPEDA is consent-based, you could say that a person will withdraw their consent to having their information indexed by Google. And then the second way that you can approach it is by this idea of, is it reasonable for Google to be linking to older, irrelevant, or harmful links to older material on the internet? And so they laid the groundwork back in 2018. And that's right around the time when they did receive a complaint by an individual who had asked Google to de-index certain information of his that was found when you Googled his name.
They start with a policy position. They then get a real case. You know, how does that begin to move ahead after that?
Well, it's curious because that court, the case, like I said, started, I think, in 2017 or around 2017, 2018. And it's still ongoing, 7 or 8 years later. And the reason why it took a sort of a long time to get to where we are, not just because of the pandemic that intervened and made things more difficult, but one of the first arguments that Google raised when the OPC started investigating is Google tried to argue that that PIPEDA, because it contains a journalistic exception, Google tried to argue that when it listed search results, that it was performing more of a journalistic activity as compared to a commercial activity. And the commissioner at the time was like, okay, so this is a really fundamental question. He didn't want to opine on it by himself. He wanted the court to give an opinion. He was of the opinion, of course, that it was a commercial activity and that the journalistic exception didn't apply. But he also wanted certainty on that question. So Google and the OPC, put the matter before the court by way of a reference. And pandemic strikes in 2020, and so things slow down. But by 2021, we do get at least the first level decision where the court agrees ultimately with the OPC position that the journalistic exemption does not apply to Google, and that, yes, Google, i.e. the richest company in the world, or one of the richest companies in the world, you are conducting commercial activity when you are searching the internet and displaying search results along with advertisements. So that was in 2021. Google, not surprisingly, thought that maybe it was worthwhile to not just have one judge's opinion of it. So they appealed the decision, and then that, again, sort of took a couple of years to wind its way through the court process. And in 2023, so like 2 years ago now, the Federal Court of Appeal confirmed the trial division judge's opinion that the journalistic exception did not apply. So then we have it on pretty good footing that the law was at least applicable to Google. And then the question was whether or not, either from a consent-based analysis or from a reasonableness-based analysis, the OPC would conclude that the right to be forgotten was contained in PIVOTA.
Okay, that's a really good description of that kind of long and winding road through the court system to address at least sort of the very first argument to sort of set that essentially would trying to argue that Google's search activities in this case would have been exempted by way of the exception related to journalism, and in this case, courts through both the lower court and then the federal court of appeal both say no, this is commercial activity. That obviously brings us to the present day. Those initial court proceedings now out of the way, it essentially opens the door to the OPC to now conduct its analysis and release findings with respect to that initial complaint. That's now happened. What did they find?
Yeah, so just a couple of weeks ago, at the end of August, they released their report of finding. And like I was hinting to earlier in your show, the OPC could have approached this two ways. One is on the basis of a lack of consent, or on PIPEDA's unique provision that says that organizations can only collect, use, and disclose personal information if it's reasonable in the circumstances to do so. I'm kind of paraphrasing there. They incorporate the reasonable person test. This reasonable test in our privacy laws, which have been adopted in other Canadian privacy laws, is kind of unique to Canada. And I think it's quite interesting that we've been using it for about 25 years now. And I think the consensus is that regulators, industry, most people kind of like this idea of reasonableness. It allows for some flexibility. So instead of approaching the case on the basis of something that would have been more black and white, i.e. the withdrawal of consent, the commissioner decided ultimately to look at this by way of reasonableness. And so in this sense, it allowed for a balancing of interests. Just like in 2014, the court in Europe recognized that this right to be forgotten is not going to be absolute. And so you have to show that the information is irrelevant. The OPC in this case emphasized that not just whether or not it's relevant, but whether or not it could cause harm to someone. And then also to sort of weigh on the other hand, this idea of the public interest in knowing in having access to these older articles. And so this use of the reasonableness provision in PIPEDA allowed for them to, you know, to say, like, if you're going to make a request, the things that the search engine are going to consider are things like, are you a public figure? Does the public interest have a particular interest in knowing these articles about you? Is it a matter of public debate? Or on the other hand, were you a minor or are you still a minor and this information is still out there and about you? And so it allows for a very contextual analysis as to sort of whether or not the on the one hand, the privacy interest, and on the other hand, the matter of a public record. I think, again, the decision from my conversations with people within the industry is that it's relatively well received. And everyone is still asking whether or not the decision would have been as contextual if the OPC had decided to look at it from a consent perspective. But in any event, we're at the point where we are at. People I think the OPC is ready to defend its decision about reasonableness. And to that point, I think maybe what we should talk about is the fact that the OPC came up with this decision. And then, of course, up until at least today, and we're recording this on September 12th, Google has yet to indicate that it's going to implement the recommendations from the OPC.
Okay, and that does provide a good segue. So we've got our decision, interesting legal route that provides some amount of flexibility. Before we get to Google's response, can you contrast the approach that the OPC is taking with what is now in the GDPR, how it's been how this has been interpreted in Europe? Are these largely consistent? Are there notable differences at all that you can identify between the Canadian system and the European system? And I ask in part because, you know, you mentioned that this has been implemented pretty effectively at this stage in the EU. If Canada moves in a different direction, one of the things, no doubt, that a company like Google will argue is that, you know, you're creating additional regulatory costs, making it more difficult to comply. Whereas if there's a consistency, that it in some ways takes away some of those arguments. So curious as to how consistent the Canadian approach is with what we find elsewhere.
I am sure, well, I'm quite sure that the OPC would say that their test is very consistent and very similar to the test that's used under GDPR and also under the Quebec law. That being said, they didn't use the exact same words. They imparted this notion of serious harm to an individual. And I totally see your point, Michael, because within the privacy world, this is a global industry, and advocates and industry, civil society, we've long been saying that for privacy to work, we can't have varying standards from jurisdiction to jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I mean, that's all you have to do is look at the way the United States deals with data breach and just how expensive and unruly it is, because they've got 50 different laws and 50 different standards to try to abide by. And so with the right to be forgotten, I think there is a fear that that the lack of identical language in the tests that have to be met will create sort of this uncertainty and create sort of a larger regulatory burden that you mentioned. It's still too early to sort of see how this will play out. I think, like I mentioned, that the regulators will try to put a spin on it, that their tests are all quite similar. But in law, like if you choose different language, it usually means because you're trying to emphasize something different than another jurisdiction. So it will be interesting to sort of see how that plays out in the long run.
Okay, that's really interesting observations. So what is likely to come next? You mentioned the initial response of Google was not positive. That's where a lot of the media coverage went, talking about Google's initial rejection. Can you talk about both how Google responded to this, the privacy commissioner's findings, as well as what their options, and I suppose what the options of the OPC, depending on what Google does, in terms of trying to get this decision enforced?
It could play out in any number of different ways. A person who's resident in Quebec could make an identical complaint under the Quebec law, which would result in a legally enforceable order on Google that they abide by the de-indexing regulation in the Quebec law. In fact, in the Quebec law, Google could even be fined if they refuse to de-index. So it will be interesting to sort of see if maybe someone from Quebec chooses that route to sort of force Google's hand. But under PIPEDA, of course, it's an older law, and the privacy commissioner does not have the power to levy fines for not abiding by the law, nor does the commissioner have the power to even order an organization to implement the recommendations. So the only thing the commissioner could do is take Google to court again. And we've seen the commissioner on occasion have to do this. I can tell you that in the early days of PIPEDA enforcement, I was actually hired by the OPC. I worked there as litigation counsel, and it was my job to immediately bring court proceedings to any organization that that didn't implement our recommendations. Ironic, maybe not ironically, I never once had to go to court because even just sending them a draft notice of application, sending the organization a draft notice of application was enough to get them to sort of negotiate and come around and implement the recommendations. So it's a very sort of, I think, effective tool to this sort of threat of, you know, ongoing legal proceedings. But there are some companies like the large tech companies who aren't really all that afraid of you know, more litigation. So it will be interesting to sort of see if Google digs in, you know, digs their feet in the sand and is willing to sort of continue this battle in federal court, or whether or not they're going to sort of see that maybe the writing is on the wall here, in that it's inevitable that this right to be forgotten will be somehow enforced, either through Quebec or through reform of PIPEDA. You know, like we're expecting any day now for the Liberal government to introduce or reintroduce a more modern private sector privacy law. And the last attempt to do this before Parliament prorogued back in the new year, the more modern private sector privacy law would have been more easily interpreted as having this right to be forgotten in it.
Okay. That's you've in some ways anticipated where I wanted to go next as a point of really wrapping up, which is what comes next, especially within the context of the prospect of legislative reform, which is, I think you're right, you know, really has the potential of implications here in a couple of ways. One, potentially the codification of this particular of this right to be forgotten, and then of course also changes to the enforcement landscape, and perhaps even third, potentially changes to some of the reasonableness approach that you talked about as well. So, can you talk a little bit about what reform might mean, both, I guess, for the existence of a right to be forgotten, but then also for this case as well? You know, is this a case where Google plays for time in the hope that, you know, if they oppose this particular finding, that the landscape changes or shifts a little bit if there is some sort of legislative changes?
Yeah, and maybe Google can play out the waiting game here and hope to influence the government's position on the codification of the right, and make it at least very consistent with the other jurisdictions in which Google has to do this. The sort of interoperability of privacy laws is that topic that we just talked about, and I could see not just the Googles of the world, but many industry players will want to try to influence the government to make sure that the codification of the right to be forgotten in the new, more modern privacy law is tailored to lessen the regulatory burden on the companies that have to abide by it. I do think that in our more modern privacy law, we are going to see an expansion of this reasonableness concept. We saw it in the previous drafts. They plan on putting a bit more meat on the bones when it comes to the interpretation of what is and what is not reasonable, which I think is a welcome a welcome sort of policy position by almost everyone concerned. The more clarity we can get on, you know, what is and what is not reasonable, I think that's very helpful to everyone. And also in the new, more modern law, there's going to be less of an emphasis on consent, and more of an emphasis on reasonableness and legitimate interests, and which are all concepts that the Europeans have been sort of playing around with for 7 years now. I see it as an opportunity, hopefully, to put enough clarity in a new law such that, like I mentioned, that in those jurisdictions where we have a right to be forgotten, that the test to meet, the way it's applied, the way it's enforced, are all very similar to one another, so as to not create sort of that mess I use as an example, the data breach laws in the United States. We can't forget too that Alberta and BC have their own laws, and I think they're waiting to see what happens at the federal level, because I'm quite certain that those two jurisdictions will want to follow suit. But again, I think they're waiting because they want to make sure that whatever they create is consistent with what the federal government is going to create.
Okay. I mean, super interesting to see both this case that is, now years in the making as it's worked its way through the courts and the commissioner and potentially the courts again. And at the same time, we've got this parallel track, it would seem, with legislative reform that could upend or at least make some changes to this process as well. And at the end of the day, major implications, whatever the outcome, for how we engage with the internet, how people find information online. It's, of course, always worth emphasizing that we're not talking about the removal of the content itself, but merely the links. But those links matter a whole lot given the relevant role, the critical role that search engines play. So super interesting. And Chris, you've done a really great job of outlining where things have gone and assessing where the law might be headed. So thank you so much, both for all the work you do for Canadian privacy, but also for taking the time to join me on the podcast.
Like I said, it was a real honor.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbitespod, or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo Lebron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose Lebron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.